So during this evening's webinar, we are going to go into a question that comes up quite often, just from years of doing this, and this is from both the advisor and agent side and the consumer, which is, how do I know what insurance company is best for me? So we're going to go through some common questions, some pieces that are important to be aware of, in relationship to flexibility, companies' ratios, how much money can I add towards premium, how much money can I add towards PUAs. We're going to touch on items that have already been covered in prior webinars. What we're going to spend most of our time on is really studying companies and their actual performance. And we'll get into what that means, but the biggest piece or the biggest item that we see people have buyer's remorse on is they purchase a policy based off of an illustration, a projection that shows one thing, and then it delivers values that are substantially less than what was projected. So looking at actual performance, who's delivered, smaller carriers, larger carriers, asking the right questions is important, and that's what we're going to spend the majority of our time on here this evening. But let's progress through everything. So when we have this question, how do I know what insurance company is best for me? And this is great, especially tying into the infinite banking concept, because our first piece, flexibility. This is critical. When I'm going to take a cash value life insurance policy out, I do want to make sure that it is flexible. And really what that means is I want the ability to adjust my contributions. I'm going to be able to pay in less. I'm going to be able to pay in more. I want the convenience of being able to borrow and repay, have an online portal. All of that is important. So we've got a couple bullet points here. Having the ability to adjust premium payments at leisure. And what this means is if I have my payment frequency at annual, is it easy the next year or any policy year to switch to monthly or vice versa? Can I switch from monthly to annual? Being aware of how companies allow us to actually make transactions with our policy is important. The biggest piece, especially if we are using the policy to maximize cash value, is contributing PUA payments, and will a company allow us or not allow us to make PUA payments without medical underwriting? That's huge. A lot of times we have to ask. If we're a consumer, we have to ask the agent. If we're an agent, sometimes we have to ask the company a million different times in a million different ways. So it's important. And if we're looking at companies and shopping and different products, we want to be familiar with the rules of each company and product. Not to say we have to know every detail, but we don't want to get into a situation where we would have done something differently if we would have known from the get-go, but we didn't know, and that's where we have buyer's remorse. So when it comes to PUA payments, and in particular, making PUA payments without medical underwriting, some insurance companies will allow you to drop money into PUAs at leisure over the course of the year, and limits I have may apply, they will apply depending on the carrier. If you've watched any of our webinars, a lot of times we'll use that 10x ratio, meaning wherever I set my minimum premium, I can contribute up to 10 times that premium in PUAs. Some companies will allow me just to throw it in at leisure. Some companies require it only on the policy anniversary date. And some will require medical underwriting. And the policy design's important as well. We're not going to go into too much detail on that this evening, because that has been covered thoroughly in prior webinars. But to answer the question, how do I know what company is best for me? Depends on how much flexibility I need. Right? If I want an account where I want the ability to pay in, say, $100,000 per year, and I set my MEC limit at $100,000, but I don't want to commit to $100,000 because I don't want to get a bill every year for that much, How do I set up an account where I've got a MEC limit of 100K and I literally set my premium? We do this all the time. At 10,000 a year, which I can pay one time a year, or I can break that up over 12 months and just throw extra cash into the account at my leisure. That's where flexibility comes into play. Designing it where the company allows me to do it. The IRS allows me to do it in terms of the MEC limit. That's the kind of stuff we want to question if we are a consumer. And if we're an agent, we want to question the company to see what we can and cannot do with a particular carrier. Ratios. So this one is important. Going back to where our money can go, right? When I pay money into a policy, where can it go? I can pay dollars towards the insurance premium, or I can pay them towards cash. At the end of the day, those are the two main areas that dollars can be directed to into a policy. So questions to ask. Does the insurance company allow for a 1090 split? A way to identify that without really having to try and break it down, especially if the illustrations are difficult for me to decipher or ask the right questions on when I'm discussing it with my agent, is do I see greater than 80% cash value in the first year? Meaning, do I make a $10,000 contribution? Say that's my total contribution. In year one, do I see somewhere between 80 and 90%? If so, I have a very aggressive split, very close to this 1090 split. And what that means, 1090 split, I'm assuming I have 10% of my contribution allocated towards premium and 90% allocated towards PUAs. Here's the main piece, actual performance. Right, so when it comes to policies, this is what we're going to focus on this evening. The biggest area that we've seen individuals have buyer's remorse in this industry is they start a policy and they learn that they could have done something differently after they've already started. We run into that frequently. Sometimes people have policies that are 7, 10. Sometimes we've run into 30-year-old policies. At that point, they're going to deliver because we've already satisfied the premium expenses, but it could have been designed much differently, right? So the first thing is on the design, obviously, where's my money going via premium and cash? Here's the biggest thing, and I have touched on this in almost all of our webinars, most of our short videos in one way or another. Is when I take out an actual life insurance policy and I purchase it, the illustration may display high cash values or returns, but the actual performance is substantially less, sometimes closer to the guaranteed values. This can happen, the design, going back to where my money can go, premium and cash, that is very important when we see high expense policies, meaning everything going towards premium, that does create issues or where the policies don't perform. When you see these historical policies where people reference whole life produces between 2 to 3%, it's usually a case from all the examples we've seen, historics, a 100% base premium policy. So the design's critical. But also, the insurance carrier is critical, right? Should I buy, here's a key question, a policy because they, when I say they, the insurance company, illustrates or projects higher returns than all other companies? Because over the years, when we look at policies, and in particular, hypothetical illustrations that were presented back in the 70s, 80s, 90s, all the way up to present, what you'll find, what's always been the case, different companies have projected different rates. There's always been a point in time that's usually a time span, or it's a number of years, where one company is projecting the highest returns. And it's not that this is a bad thing, but the issue, and this is more from the consumer standpoint, one looking to purchase a policy, is if I am uneducated in respect to cash value life insurance, and I'm presented an illustration. And then I'm told the dividend rate has pretty much been the same for the past 5 or 10 years, or let's assume I take a policy out and the dividend stays the same. It doesn't adjust that much. My mindset as a consumer is, well, this illustration kind of projects exactly what I can expect to see on my policy performance. Right? Should the illustration project the actual or real values? And what is almost always the case that we've seen, in particular with smaller companies, is illustrations often under-deliver. Now, we're going to look at actual policies. We've got some short videos, something that a lot of you may have seen at this point as well, and we'll likely refer to that link in the recording of this video. But when I buy a policy based off the illustration, is it going to deliver? Or the issue we always see is one buys it off of the illustration, a consumer buys a policy, and it doesn't deliver. The actual performance is much less than the projected performance. So a big area of emphasis is historical performance. Does the company have a track record of delivering, not just illustrating, actually producing strong returns? And we're going to go through this with some actual data this evening. A question to ask. I ask this all the time because companies have come to us for years, they still do, wanting us to sell their products. And the number one question that it always comes down to this is, okay, the flexibility is there. The projected values look great. I can structure it where the guarantees are decent. Do you guys have any proof of performance? And the response I usually get is, oh, you mean dividend history? Yes, no. We need proof, an actual policy that's 10, 20, 30 years old where I can see the actual IRRs. And often the response I get is, oh, well, we can't disclose that for confidentiality, which I understand, but some companies do have proof of concept, which tells us something. So again, we have proof of performance. We've got policies, whether they are individual consumers, which I will not disclose this evening just for everyone's protection's sake, but we do have some which I'll refer to often. And then we have older policies too. But what I've seen consistent is we've been able to obtain historical data of properly designed policies from these big four. And smaller companies have not. The only historical data I have from smaller companies is when a consumer has been nice enough to send us an old policy. We've got old ones from a couple small companies to reference: Lafayette, Mutual Trust. We recently got one from Penn Mutual. That's about 40 years old. So we got to see the historical performance there, the year over year, which is really interesting, which we won't be going into this evening just because we're not going to disclose the individual's information, but it did not deliver on anywhere near what the illustrations projected. Another big thing is the company financials. So anyone on this webinar or anyone that's watched any of our webinars or any of the short videos we have on our channel has heard these words come out of my mouth or my voice, I don't know, 10 million times. Four major mutual carriers. And the big thing I have with these carriers is, again, going back to my background, before I was in the sales side of things, running a business, my background was designing policies for corporations. This was often with SERPs. We're actually working on a BOLI case right now. And the most interesting piece about this is when you look at corporations, policies they already have on the books, we can see what the performance is. Can also project things moving forward, and they go to these four major mutual carriers primarily. There's times other ones come into play, but what's been consistent, and again, we're going to look at some data on this very shortly here, the performance is there with those guys, where smaller companies, as far as an actual performance standpoint, has been subpar. They have not produced anything that's displayed higher internal rate of return, net returns, stronger than the four major mutual companies, which, in case this is the first webinar you're viewing, the big four are MassMutual, Guardian, New York Life, and Northwestern Mutual. We primarily recommend these two, and as a company, we primarily use these two with individuals we work with, and this 100% has to do with flexibility. We can design them to be flexible and more accommodating. You can refer back to our company selection and policy flexibility webinar that goes into detail on that, but I don't want to spend too much time on that piece. So what we're going to look at via some visuals here, which is going to give us some concrete data and some nice numbers. One is a vital signs report, which we've selected 8 companies. That's the max we can add on one report. That's going to go through the carrier's financials, how much insurance they have in force. And you are going to see a difference here just with the major mutuals. We've only included the two I referred to with the maximum flexibility, MassMutual and Guardian, compared to other carriers that are heavily used with the infinite banking concept. And then we're going to go through some older historical policies and then some that are a little bit more recent as well. So let's dig in here. Let's begin with the vital signs report. A lot of data here, a lot of numbers. We're not going to go through every piece of this because what it does not speak to is historical performance of actual cash value life insurance policies, but it does give us some very important data to be aware of. Excuse me. So who we have on the top left, you see MassMutual and you see Guardian. What we have here are ratings. The last one, our Comdex ranking, is in a lot of ways kind of a grade, almost as if we're grading the different rating carriers. And we're going to give it a score anywhere from 0 to 100 being the highest. So the companies we added on here, we can customize these with any carriers. I put this together to specifically highlight companies promoted or used for the banking concept. And this is not to say any of these carriers are bad. If a policy is designed right with any carrier, it's still going to perform decently. We've got Lafayette, Ohio National, Penn Mutual, Security Mutual, Mutual Trust, and American United Life, which is actually owned by One America. Okay. Now, as we go through the financials, again, we're not going to go through all of the data here. If we just start with the ranking here, the Comdex, which kind of gives me a financial grade, you can see a distinction here immediately. Cream of the crop, 98 and 99. Look at the other carriers. Both Lafayette and American United Life are solid. 95, Penn Mutual's above 90 as well. They're at 92. This is important to look at. What this really just shows is independent carriers, companies, I should say, that rate the financial strength of financial institutions, insurance companies. If we see that grades do not exist in some areas, that just means that the insurance company elected not to participate in that study, which speaks to a lot in itself. But again, this is great information to be aware of just to better display the financial strength of the insurance company we are looking at. Total admitted assets, and we're going to look at this on a graph as well so we don't have to see all these digits, is when we just look at the size. If you look at Mass Mutual, New York Life, and Northwestern Mutual, I didn't put New York Life or Northwestern Mutual on here primarily because of the lack of flexibility, but I couldn't fit everything on one report. Their company size, New York Life and Northwestern, are very similar to Mass Mutual. They are giants in the industry. Guardian, of the big four, and why we put them in the big four is because their actual performance has been on par from everything we've seen with Mass, New York Life, and Northwestern Mutual. They're not small by any means, but comparatively speaking to a Mass, they are smaller just from a company size. However, when you start to look at the second and third tier companies, what do you notice? Big difference just in the overall size. This will give us a nice breakdown just of their assets and such, where they have some of their money invested, their bond quality. Let's continue on though. And these reports are open to everyone. We can send them to anyone. Just request them if you're watching the webinar. Total income. So we see their operating income. And again, the main purpose of going through one of these financial reports is when we're looking at an illustration, the numbers are going to show one thing. How do we know if a carrier is actually going to deliver? How do we know if anyone's going to deliver on any type of investment? Look at their financial strength. What do they have to back it up? It's important to be aware of this kind of stuff. Here's a nice piece that just goes over premium growth to see where people are going with their policies. Now, Mass Mutual, them and New York Life really are the cream of the crop when it comes to bank-owned life insurance policy, BOLI policies. They have among the highest rates right now. They're attractive to banks. That is going to inflate their numbers quite a bit when they get massive size deposits in one shot from banks. So when we look at that premium income, that's not going to hurt them. Let's put it that way. We've got profitability. Total general expenses and income. Again, let's just go down to the graphs here. We're going to spend some time on this on the graphs. Analysis of the actual amount of life insurance in force. This is going to be really interesting when we see this. Same thing with life insurance premiums written. And I did see a question come through. I'll be sure to address that at the end. So don't feel like I'm ignoring you. I'll definitely make it a point to address the question. So here, we've got some graphs. Rather than looking at those numbers, which have got a million digits. So what we've got, Mass Mutual and Guardian, this is net premiums written. Again, Mass is a massive company. And if we include a New York Life, a Northwestern Mutual, we're going to see very similar numbers in terms of a side-by-side graphical comparison. And you've got Guardian here. And you've got everyone else. AUL is poking out a little bit. Here's an interesting piece, insurance in force. So when you look at the actual amount of life insurance in force, where are people going? And when you look at the size of actual life insurance policies, I don't know that I have that report on this Vital Signs report, but we can produce that. You do see large dollar numbers, larger life insurance policies with the major mutual companies, meaning people with money, people attributing or contributing large amounts of money are gravitating towards these carriers. Either A, they've seen the historical performance, or B, they're researching it and seeing that that data is there. But I mean, you see a clear difference when you start to compare and contrast here. Individual life premiums. So this is going to exclude group life insurance policies written. Or if there's a big group case written with a lot of term or guaranteed issue whole life, that's not going to be included in this report. So individual policies, which likely most people on the webinar or watching this recording would fall in this category, big difference there. When we look at group life premiums, this is a little skewed in Guardian's case. They have one of the strongest in the industry disability products. And they do a lot of group disability insurance. That's not going to hurt them at all in this report. Main point, any agent can produce what we have here. This is called a Vital Signs report, which just highlights an insurance carrier's financials. There's about 30 more reports I can add to what we have here. You can go as deep as you'd like. It helps, especially if we're shopping or someone's presenting a company to us that we have not heard about before. We want more information. We want to be well educated. This is a great way we can dig into the company. So next, we're going to look at some historical pieces. Now, some of the data is independent, some is not. Let's just start going through it. The first piece we have is a 20-year historical look back. The study period is not my favorite, but it will make the point. The study period is from 1984 through 2004. The other thing I don't like about this, and it's not fair when you're looking at the internal rate of return really with any of these companies, is this just assumes we buy a $250,000 whole life policy and we pay a premium. We're not really looking at PUAs, blended policies, being creative, which is really going to make a huge impact in the IRRs, especially at the 20-year mark. But what it will show, you're going to see a consistency here where we've got some actual performance. When we've got the whole idea of illustrated performance, then actual. So over here, total cash value. We've got the illustrated IRR, and then we've got the actual IRR. What's interesting about this? 5.17%. Who's that? Guardian. NA. Manual Life. We didn't even put that in our Vital Signs report. 4.87%. Mass Mutual. 3.4. Mutual Trust. 3.96. National Life. These are carriers under 4. 4.85. There's one over 4. New York Life. 5.83. This was really when Northwestern was on the top of the food chain. 5.83 at Northwestern. Main point, carriers that are over that 4% range, who do you see? Big Four. And again, the nice thing about this, we've got illustrated what was projected at that point in time versus actual. What did they actually deliver over the 20-year period? And again, this should not be used to make a decision on any company because this is old, firstly. Secondly, it's not designed properly, meaning the policies are not designed properly. And third, we can take any study period. We can make this 1994 through 2014 and get different results as far as who's on top, who's in fourth place, who's in last. What's going to be consistent, though, is every report we've seen who consistently comes in the top four slots are the carriers that we've got circled here. Same thing when we look down here. The difference is the first one was on a 45-year-old male. Now we've got somebody a little bit older, 55-year-old male. And again, this is just price shopping. Buying a policy for a premium. And typically, when I buy a policy with a 100% base premium expense, a lot of companies will trout their historical performance saying we're better than all the competition. In most cases, what you'll find when it's 100% base premium comparison, the higher the premium often results in a higher IRR. All right, so in these cases, in this study period, Northwestern has one of the higher premiums. For the older gentlemen, they've got the highest IRR. All right, so then we've got 435 Guardian. This is actually a typo. This one's meant to be Mass Mutual. You can tell from the product that was selected there. 422, it also matches with the top one. There's New York. Consistency, though. Top four have delivered. So again, when we're looking to practice the banking concept, what I emphasize often is, okay, the banking concept, we can accomplish that with any policy. At the same time, how do I maximize my monetary value so I have more money to practice the concept to a greater degree? Or more money if my goal is to pull out a retirement income stream. If I know how to maximize my value, that puts me in a better position really to accomplish any strategy. If I need more mech space or anything like that, I can design the policy to have more mech space. Here is an example. This is a Mass Mutual standalone policy, 1980. Actually, we have a more recent one than this. This was a 10-pay policy on a 50-year-old male. The annual premium for a period of 10 years only, or his net contribution, was about $14,500. What's nice about this, total cash value, illustrated, actual. First 3 years, identical. Now again, this is an older policy. So what this means is in this time span, we had double-digit dividends. This did not hurt the policy performance at all. It boosted it. But dividends are great. They're going to go up and down, typically with the interest rate environment. What I want to be aware of with the policy is my IRR. So this example runs to 2015. We actually have a recent study of the same policy through 2019. Here's the projected, but here is the actual. Now, the 2019 IRR for this has dipped a little bit as the dividend rate since 15 has come down from 7.1 to 6.4 gradually. It's about 5.97%. We've got that piece, but just from the insurance carrier, that information is not approved to be disclosed yet. And we are independent brokers, but at the same time, I want to be respectful of a company's request. That's why I'm not going to post it on a webinar that everyone can see. All right, so let's look at some other historical pieces. So here's a policy that's not a 10 pay, 45-year-old male. And again, this is data directly from the insurance company. We've done our own independent studies as well. We've got a short video that demonstrates historical performance, recent examples. If you're looking for a more recent example, that was a policy issued in 2014. It's about a 5-minute video on our channel. Type in historical performance, recent examples. If I can write tonight. And it'll give you the historics on that, including the guaranteed values too. And that just emphasizes a properly designed policy. So again, what we're looking at here, total cash value, illustrated actual. All right, that 4-6% range. If the policy is designed properly, if it's with one of the top four companies, we can see that performance. Younger female, total cash value, actual performance. So this is the net performance that's displayed here, since the dividends are obviously much higher than that. But again, a dividend rate is a gross rate. Here's actually that 10 pay policy. So this is a piece that can be disclosed. It just doesn't display the year by year report. So this is the same policy, 50-year-old male. There's the premium. It's just consolidated where they skip every 5 years. Not a big fan of that. But it goes to a current. And at 2015, that's where that IRR was 6.117, I believe. Now, 5.95. I believe I quoted 5.97, so I was a little off there. I guess my memory's failing me. So again, historical performance. This is with MassMutual. Let's take a look at another carrier here. We've got Guardian, and we've got an old school policy from Guardian. I don't have it on here. Issued in 1975. So we've got all these columns. Just to get to the point here, here's the input, 9660, and the study period is 30 years. Here's the total cash value. Okay, so we can tell this was not a blended policy. Clear indicator of that is the first year, nothing in cash. Here's all I want to highlight. Year 30, what do I have in cash? $995,000. Okay. I paid in $9,660 for a period of 30 years. So let's plug that in here. I got $99,960. 30-year time period. So let's make this a little bit bigger. That's better. If I just plug 9660 and I stuff it under my mattress for 30 years, that means I have saved, call it 290K, 289.8 to be exact. The question then is, what do I need to yield to be able to produce what this policy produced at that 995? At 5%, the account or the policy would produce $673,000 in cash. So it was above 5%. At 6%, 809. Plug in 7, we're getting there. Comes out to just about 7.1%. I'm off by about 500 bucks here. Now again, this is an old policy that lived through the 80s. We've got that short video I referred to on our channel that shows a more recent example. Main point here is we've seen companies have produced examples. We've been doing this for a while now, so we have actual performance on the books with the four major mutual companies. Smaller companies may have it. I just haven't seen it yet. But it's good to ask for that if we're an agent or consumer. So no, that's a lot of data. This has been recorded. Let's open the floor to questions. If you have any questions, feel free to respond to the email you receive this link from, or email us direct at our info account. Let me see the questions that came through. One of them was good in relationship to flexibility. Yeah, so great question here by Pedro. MassMutual doesn't seem to have a lot of flexibility on their PUAs when compared to Guardian or Penn Mutual. 100% accurate. If you look at the actual flexibility of a MassMutual account, the only way to really make that work and not have to go through medical underwriting years in the future is if we design it with the appropriate riders, which we actually go into this in detail in the flexibility webinar, we can make contribution adjustments without medical underwriting one time a year on our anniversary date. So if someone, where Mass works well, if someone is disciplined enough and comfortable with a one time per year contribution adjustment, first year they pay in $50,000, then they pay in $10,000, then they pay in $80,000. You can do that kind of stuff. We just, if we like MassMutual, we have to be comfortable with that one time per year adjustment or be comfortable with going through underwriting all the time. So you are correct there. It's a good point to mention. Let me look here. I see a question coming here. Plus, it seems that MassMutual doesn't really embrace the IBC. Yeah, you know, on that point, I know a lot of smaller companies will use the word embrace or promote, have even listed on the application, was this sale supported or was it made through marketing the IBC, infinite banking concept, where all the big four do not do that. What I will comment on that piece is, I mean, the infinite banking concept, what that does is really teach one how to use a life insurance policy as a financing tool. So the big companies or any life insurance company, when we are looking for a policy as a consumer or for an agent educating someone, really then rather than saying, hey, here's the IBC, we want to make this work, look at the companies, see who's delivered, and explain what we can and cannot do with them. This way, the consumer can say, okay, here's what I want to accomplish. If it's IBC and I want to pay extra interest back with my loans and such, then yeah, MassMutual, it's going to be difficult to use them. But if one is comfortable with the flexibility features, how loans work with Mass, it can work well. It's just the transactional details we want to be aware of. Let me look here. So I see a question from Cynthia. Really, the only companies that you can write as an independent agent of the big four are MassMutual and Guardian, correct? Since New York Life and Northwestern Mutual have captive agents. That's 100% accurate on Northwestern Mutual. New York Life does allow brokerage, but it's kind of with a catch. Either A, to write any size policy, you typically have to partner up in some capacity with a New York Life agent, or the case size has to be above a $20,000 base premium. That's until you hit a certain level of production as a broker, then you can use them free and clear. So if you wanted to, you can use New York Life for brokerage, but they do have a bit more of a captive setup. Sure. And MM, hope I answered your question in relationship to the IBC and companies embracing them, embracing the concept. Correct. Dream, is Guardian the most flexible of the big four? Yes. I mean, they are, from a transactional standpoint, easy to work with among the big four. A lot of smaller companies have the same or similar flexibility provisions where you can add PUAs on an unscheduled basis. Of the big four, they are, to answer your question, they are the most flexible. Ronald, do your beneficiaries receive the cash value plus the death benefit? So in most cases, it is just the net death benefit. As our cash value grows, that will push up the death benefit. So if you go back to any of the historical examples, look at the Guardian one, for example. If I die day one, I receive $500,000 in death benefit. If I die at age 65, I receive $1.5 million in death benefit. Now my cash has also grown to about $1 million. So if my cash grew, what did it do? Pushed up my death benefit as well. So the total net death benefit always accounts for growth from the cash value. As cash value grows, it does buy us what's called paid up additional life insurance. To answer your question, the net death benefit, whatever we see on that column, is what we receive in most cases. There are ways in some policies that do grant both, but at the end of the day, it almost always ends up netting the same amount. The total net death benefit, though, is what we receive on 99.9% of policies, how they're usually set up. Good questions, guys. Anything else before we conclude this evening? Well, appreciate everyone taking some time to connect. This will be uploaded tomorrow. And again, my apologies for not uploading one or conducting one last week. Came down with a nasty bug, but it's all good. We'll talk to y'all soon. Have a good evening.